Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm not the host of a podcast, so I feel like I should be rotated out of this. But here we go. First of all, you got to scoot back away from the microphone. But we talked about this.
That's true.
Yeah. So that you can project your voice a little bit.
That's right. Because I get too much of the soulful Vader voice. So I gotta increase the pitch.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Here we go. So.
All right.
Welcome, everybody, to Bro Chat. What are we, volume six this week, I think?
I think so.
So seven, pretty excited. Six or seven. That's a good point. We'll say seven. 7.7. In fact, all of them are like 6.0s and 5.0s, so that shouldn't. We got to start adding some variations there. But anyway, we're here with our hosts. We got Rain Waters, he's the crowd favorite, obviously the Afterburn podcast, and then Vader, who's up and coming challenger to that seat of the Kodiak Chat podcast. And I'm just here to have a good time. But special welcome to Drago Walters, who's here from Europe, Buckley now, right?
Buckley. Currently at Tulsa doing sims.
Nice. Awesome. So welcome to the Bro Chats. I want to say thank you to all of Rain's Patreon supporters. and if we ever get some on the Kodiak Shack podcast, I thank you in advance. We'll see.
Yeah. I don't know how to make a Patreon.
Yeah, I don't either. That's my intro. That's all I got. Yeah.
There we go. Nailed it. So, as is tradition on the Kodiak Shack podcast, Drago, thanks for being here and tell us about yourself. It's not a trap.
That's always a trap, man. Drago, man, I know Vader and Bender from way back. They helped raise me in the S16 community when I was in Misawa, and now I'm in the Buckley Guard flying Vipers for as long as I can. That's it.
I like that.
That's sweet.
Yeah, yeah. So, I'll talk about Drago and his achievements because he's got a lot of them and he's an impressive dude. So Bender and I were relatively old hat at the 13th Fighter Squadron when Drago showed up. We were about a year into our time. Drago showed up. He was a FAPE prior, and then he came out to Misawa for his first assignment into the F-16, and then he actually got an instructor pilot upgrade and went to weapons school out of Misawa, which is very uncommon for FAPES to go to weapon school. And when I say uncommon, I think like one guy, two guys in the F-16 had done that. So big achievement, went to Holloman and pretty much put that place on his back. He won't say that, but I definitely will. And he was doing great work at Holloman, and now he's at Buckley, continuing to do great work. So we appreciate you being here, Drago. You're an awesome dude. And it's good. This is good times. But Rain,
so the Kodiak Shack podcast, man. You gotta tell Blade and Roku, man. I'm excited.
Oh, they're gonna love it. They're gonna be having a good old time, just throwing out shacks all over the place.
That's right.
So before we get into fighter pilot stuff, we'll talk about some T1 stuff because who doesn't want to talk about that? So Rain, can you give the premise for what is going on right now in T1 land in pilot training?
Well, I mean, to be fair, like I'm not in the weeds, but just seeing what Air Force Times pumped out this week, or I guess last week, it looks like the T1 thing has changed up. So I talked about UPT 2.5. I think it sounds like Drago, you've been down to Randolph to talk UPT 2.5. Still trying to like wrap my arms around it. I think there's a lot of like good things that are coming out of it. But one aspect is dudes and dudettes get their wings after T6s, which I had a question about that to begin with. Like, why are you getting your wings after T6s? I surmise that, hey, maybe this is just trying to fix a PowerPoint slide somewhere, and you know, we plus up and move it to the green block. And now this year, so again, skeptical me is starting 1 January, according to Air Force Times, the T1 syllabus is going to have 75 days of simulator training. They're getting sims from Redbird and then legacy T1 simulators, and all the T1 training is going to happen in the simulator. And then they're going to go off to their MWS. So they'll have their wings, I guess, at Vance. I don't think that is, let's see, it says Vance is slated to get them first, and then it follow on to Columbus and then Laughlin. So I don't think there's a whole lot of like complete data in this article, to be fair, but it sounds like that's the trend and that's the way it's going, which I don't know. Toss up to you guys. What do you think? I mean, it seems kind of spicy.
Well, and one thing to add before we get into it is in the airline world, that is not uncommon at all. And most people who are going heavies, their entire syllabus, except for like 1 or 2 or 3 flights in the heavy world, is in the sim. So it's not an uncommon thing. It's just very uncommon for pilot training to do the majority of your training in a simulator.
But you know, the airlines now flying big old fat planes, small portion of the syllabus is in IDTs or basically a flat screen simulator. Most of them, like majority of your syllabus, is accomplished in a full motion simulator. Some of that is done because there's extra time in full motion simulators, but there's a mandate to have the full motion simulator. I can say, like, the first time you go land a big old fat plane for an airline, yeah, sure, that's the first time you're really doing it. But you also have a lot of experience at that point to be sitting in that seat that you can lean on and you can blend the two worlds. I don't know if, I mean, I know for a fact that I guess if I went from T6s into the T1 simulator and then go to the C17, I mean, I would imagine it's somewhere you're going to have to plus that up, but you're going to you're losing airmanship. Anytime you're not flying, getting air up under you, like, you're losing opportunities for airmanship. And the sim is great for getting reps, like doing DCA or SEED. You can get a bunch of good reps to get the mech, but at some point too, you got to get out there and do it. I don't know. This one.
So Drago was able to go visit the, I don't know, the genesis or the location where these ideas were kind of formed, which we've had Tiger and Slayer from DET24, which is where Pilot Training Next or PTN or PTT, however you want to use the acronym you want to use. But Drago went out there. But before we get into the story of what Drago learned when he went out there, Drago, do you want to tell the story about how you got the invite out there? Or should I tell the story about how you got the invite with the Facebook message? We here at the Kodiak Shack podcast would like to welcome our new sponsor, Adamus Cyber. Working with the military means there are some minimum cybersecurity requirements that are in every contract. Complying with these requirements can be painfully slow and really take your company's focus off your military customers and end users. Thankfully, the team at Adamus has simplified the process exclusively for small businesses working with the military. It should be expected that security requirements are going to be a part of working with the military, but they don't have to be difficult. Learn why prior guests on the podcast like Arun from OpsLab or Brian from ResCon use Adamus to comply with the NIST 800-171, DFARS 7012, and CMMC cybersecurity requirements in their contracts. Check out their website at www.adamuscyber.com and tell them you heard about them from the Kodiak Shack podcast. Their website will be in the show notes. We appreciate all the companies that want to work with the military, and we understand working with the government isn't always the easiest thing, but we appreciate companies like Adamus that make it just a little bit easier.
Dad, so you're talking about our story or Stab's story?
No, our story, like how everything erupted with the UPT 2.5 video. That got...
How bad we were hurting in a gym that day, man. You can tell that story. That was that was crazy.
So Drago and I are stationed at Holloman. And, you know, if anybody doesn't know, each fighter squadron has multiple chats, whether it's on like Slack or, what are some of the other ones?
GroupMe.
WhatsApp. Yeah, GroupMe, WhatsApp. And there's going to be layers of chats. So there's going to be the entire squadron is on a chat. And then there's going to be like, there's going to be a bro chat where it's like, hey, only the younger dudes, the dudes who are cool are on a bro chat. And that chat's not talked about so much. So Drago and I arrive at the Holloman Fitness Center in roughly the same time. And we are both not feeling great from the adult sodas we had the night prior. We were struggling to find the motivation to get a workout in. And as I'm like walking up to the gym, the bro chat for the squadron I was in, the 8th Fighter Squadron, they post this video. And it was a video of UPT 2.5. And anybody who's kind of been in the industry knows that this video was, it was a huge like divergence or separation from what the reality of UPT is. And they just made like these nice, like friendly or in, I don't know. How do you explain what that video was?
I mean, it was categorically tone deaf and offensive to the people that view fighter aviation as what it is, as managing like airplanes as lethal weapon systems to like do combat and kill people. Like that's what we do. And to see people draw characters about it and the tone that video struck is offensive to anybody who considers themselves in earnest to be a warfighter, man. And it's crazy that nobody asked any of us before they published it, you know?
So, and this is why Drago's right here, because he says it just better than me. I could never said it that good. But that is it to a T. You are exactly correct. And Drago, like I see this video, and I see Drago in the gym and I show him the video and he's like, this can't happen. So then we decide So we decide as technologically unsavvy people that somebody has to post this. So I get the video and I'm going to post it to, I think it was the CAF fighter page. Like it was like the fighter page with 3-star generals and everybody there. But I don't know how to leave a comment because I'm incapable of understanding. So I just post it. So it's posted without comment, which was like another layer of, I don't know, like aggression that apparently instead of saying something, I said no thanks. And no one knew it was because that's right. And it was totally on accident, which is most of my life. And so we post that. And one of my buddies, I've talked about him a lot on the Kodiak Shack podcast, Tron Bloom. I'm halfway through my workout and he goes, hey, did you mean to get a 2-star general's attention with that post? And I was like, don't read the comments, man. Like life is just easier that way. And I had no idea what was going on, but turns out it blew up. I mean, the entire community, all communities just were in an uproar about it. And then on that Facebook chat, there is a invite put out there. And Drago and some leadership from Holloman actually accept the invite and go out to Randolph to see for themselves in person what's going on. Did I explain that well enough, Drago?
Yeah, there was some amplifying data that's not relevant to the podcast. But yeah, that's in the crux of what happened. And it was cool, Mandy. And we went down. You want to hear about the visit when we went down?
Yeah, I think it'd be cool for people to hear about it. Now, this was, what was this, circa 2021,
coming up on 2 years ago now. But we wanted to go down and see, and obviously like I was in the B course at the time, so we're seeing like you're back in the ATC machine and you hear a lot of things and you do get concerned about a lot of things that result or are the product of the lack of airmanship that you see from people coming in. I dealt with some of those with some of the students personally. And I want to say on the other side of it, you are always in the fighter industry in the situation where you're like, we're not flying as much. It's getting worse and the sky is falling. And a lot of times people are resourced a little bit worse, but by nature of the people that we, that are drawn to the types of jets that we fly, like you can overcome a lot, you know, of lack of resourcing with the right attitude and the right motivations. And so a lot of times, like nothing is quite as bad as you think that it is. Or that it will be, but sometimes it is. And when it manifests itself in our job, like those those things are immediate and they often have like pretty dire consequences. And that's why we take them seriously. And we've all been there, man. Like we all in this job have friends that don't sit at the table anymore in ever increasing number. And that's how we count, right? That's the context that we view this through. That's our lens. And that's important for people that don't have that same lens to understand that like when they don't think things are a big deal, we think about it in terms of like our friends that aren't with us anymore, man. Like it is a big deal. We understand the terms. All right. So you want to go down and see it. So we go down and see it. And we're having an open mind about it. And General Wills is gracious, and he has us. He sets up a tour at PTN and at AFPC, which that was. We'll just go through that one right now. That was exactly what you expect. We went to AFPC, nobody was working, and then we left. That's how that one went. I'm not sorry for that. It was a work day. We went to PTN, dude, and. And those guys had a lot of – there was just so much pride in that building, man. They were very well-resourced. And there was a lot of pride in that building. But what they were doing and what they were practicing, man, we'd seen like their kids were getting through F-16 training, but they were always the last one in the class, right? And I think that when we look at the way that we're trying to reshape learning and talk around the fact that when we take people out of airplanes, it inherently takes away airmanship. And if you, any other words are nonsense. But that's not a one-to-one depending on what they're going to go fly, man. The more automated the airplane was, the more transferability that has to the airplane they're going to fly, the better that is going to manifest itself when they get there, right? So in the fourth gen fly-by-wire airplanes, there's probably the least amount of transferability between like the things that keep you alive and VR. And so we see the biggest disparity in that type of training as it manifests itself in our airplanes. Does that make sense? That's not a one for everybody. We can't say like, dude, sims in lieu of airplane training are a sin in this one airplane, the same as they are in this other airplane, because everyone's different based on the PVI and the ergonomics in those airplanes. So that is just how people learn and feel and fly, right? So we're trying to have an open mind, but we're trying to give them that data too. And whenever you go there, it's very frustrating because they're talking about what a resounding success it is. and do they're great people and they work so hard to do this thing and they're very invested in it, but their spreadsheets are all green. And that's when you start to lose hope a little bit, when you're like, look, if your win line is to send us the person that is struggling the hardest in all of our classes, that is going to take the most of our time in all of the classes, like where is that data on your green spreadsheets, man? Like where is that feedback loop that doesn't get to them somehow from us, who are the customer for the product that they are providing? And that's a pretty frustrating time when you feel like it's common knowledge and then it's not, right? And so you're kind of fighting through that, but that was kind of the crux of the trip to Randolph, man. Like there's a lot of good ideas and a lot of passion and honestly a lot of resources there to invest in things that are going to streamline training. And at face value, they're good ideas and they're run by good people who are passionate about what they do and they deserve that respect. But in action, right, they're not built for attrition. They're not built for necessarily reality. And the feedback loop to them, because it exists in the United States military, is not always streamlined such that they get the actual feedback about how they are, the product that they're providing, I think. And so, I don't know. That's a lot of words to say. I have real mixed feelings about it, man. Some of them aren't for this podcast or this audience, but I had a lot of really hard feelings about it. I obviously am on the... I think the thing that we do in the F-16 that we can't sacrifice, that other people need to adopt no matter what, when the win line is, if people are living or dying in airplanes, is you got to be an honest broker about your capabilities, man. And, dude, F-16 makes you a good pilot, and guys are going to make fun of that, but it does. You got to do a lot of things, and you're the sensor fusion module in your airplane. You're doing the most a person can in an airplane to be relevant in 2022 in that jet that has an 80 something tail on it. Right. And there's no computer that helps you do that. You got to do it, man. And you got to be good to do that, period, dot. And so, you know, who's who in the zoo in that jet, man. But you also know when you're not as good at doing something as somebody else. And so it makes you very honest, like at a mission planning table or when somebody asks you for feedback about your limitations. Right. Like, Vendor, you taught me that, and Vader, you taught me that when I was young in Misawa, and it's still very true today, man. Like, you got to be an honest broker about your capabilities. You never want to oversell what you do, right? Because we talked about the costs. And you worry that if the feedback doesn't reach the people with all the great ideas and the resources and the passion, like, even though they have the best of intentions at Randolph, can they really be honest brokers about what they are doing, about the product that they are providing? And the answer to that, without a usable feedback mechanism, is no. They can't, right? And so that's a little bit disheartening when you feel like there's a lot of good people involved in it, but you feel a little bit displaced from where you can make a change because you don't have an open line of communication to them, dude. So that sucked a little bit. But good folks. And I just wish that, I don't know, I wish that we could across the board realize and say, as it is a fact that all of us know that fly airplanes, that you cannot use VR as a replacement to training and not accept, right, the fact that you are going to buy a corresponding decrease in airmanship. There is no way, right? How much decrease in airmanship totally depends on the ergonomics that go into flying your airplane, right? But thou shalt not take away flight time and not lose something, and that loss is airmanship, and then by virtue, risk, right? Like, they dropped that video when, like, all those planes were crashing and people kept dying that one summer, and they had just, like, totally gutted all of our training, right? And those people that had been gutted for resources and training were the ones that were, like, mourning themselves in airplanes. And they were like, they dropped that video Air Force wide that was like, you guys got to do your ORM sheets, you know, and there was, like, music and shit in the background, and you're like, what? That's insane, man. How is that that's not the way to solve this problem, man. Like, resource me to train these people so that when they take off, there is inherently less risk because they are better. They are resource better to do it. And there is, I went off. Hopefully you can edit 10 minutes of that out, but
that is the record.
Sorry, dude.
I got two questions.
You know?
No.
So yeah. The first one is, I know pilot training next, right? It's UPT 2.5 now. I don't have the whole thing memorized, so I know they've iterated, but I think the first round, and maybe it held true through multiple rounds of that until it made it to 2.5 and more of a traditional assignment system. Did you guys see, because originally I think the first PTN, like all the graduates or like half the graduates were supposed to be 6 months T6 or 179 days T6s to not trip 180 days with travel regulations, and then kick them to the F-16. Did you guys actually see that?
So we saw some of the dudes. No, we didn't see anybody go from T-6 to the F-16. We saw people. Is that true?
No, we did.
Yes, we did. I'm sorry. That's a lie. We saw people that did IFF and T-6B with Slayer, who was on the podcast, right? Who flew C-17s because that call sign is too cool to fly anything else. That guy's great, though. I'm not. Hey,
he is good. He's a good dude.
Man. You're a great dude. Life's awesome. He's not qualified to teach IFF, and I'll say it to his face, man. He's a C-17 guy that flies T-6s, man. I'm sure there are things that they can learn, but he's not a fighter dude teaching IFF, man. Those are the rules. The first F in IFF is fighter. what are we doing? You know, yeah. So we saw them, and those are the people that I'm describing, Rain. They struggled the most, and they would tell you that they struggled the most. I think one of them did one assignment, is going to the aggressors right now, and he's a great dude, man. Like, I really, my heart went out to him, and he tried so hard, and he really, I think, did better than any of us thought that he would. And what was asked of him was just a Herculean effort, man, and he went through it, but he didn't excel by any stretch of the imagination. He struggled the entire time because he had to have I can't imagine the anxiety that dude had going to the F-16. Oh, yeah. with the base of experience that he had going into that, right? And that's a really horrible place to put a person, right?
I'm curious.
And he got through it, man. Like, big kudos to him, right? He got through it because he frankly took the weight of our most experienced IPs and all their effort from the top of that squadron, and by virtue of the type of person that he was and the amount of effort that he put in. You know, and should that be the norm? Should we accept that? I think probably not. But can we accept it and still get to a solution that is safe and eventually tactically proficient? Maybe is the honest answer. We want to be like, no, we can't. But I mean, he's doing fine. It just took a lot of work.
Yeah, you got to wonder the baseline of, I remember them talking about how people got put into that Pilot Training Next pipeline. And again, you know, it might have been based on, it was like prior enlisted, some, you know, maybe or CGO of the year who was a comm officer.
Yeah. They were very selective. They did not take a normal sampling of like the Air Force population size going into jets, man. They took the top and they were like, these guys have to succeed. Yeah. So they didn't have it wasn't a good sample size. And even so, not a resounding success as they would say it, right? And there was a lot of weird things when I went there, man. I know you're going to edit this podcast, but they gave you like one of those rings that tells you all your vitals.
And oh, like the it went oral to, like, ring or whatever. Phone,
and they had to like sign a waiver for it. And I was like, that's a non-starter for me, bro. Like I'm not.
Yeah.
In zero ways is my commander going to have a ring showing my vital signs so he knows what I'm doing at 2:30 a.m. Like, get out of here, dude.
Yeah.
That's crazy town.
Yeah.
Also not relevant. I apologize.
I wonder what the qualifications, because we have like NJEP. I don't know if any of you guys went to NJEP, right? But pretty much the only more or less metric for NJEP, I think, is GPA. And like back in the day, like, well, you got to go to NJEP because you get jets. That's all changed, at least in my opinion. But you would see, like, I don't know if you guys have opinion on dudes. They're great dudes who roll through NJEP. But then there are a lot who come out of NJEP. It's like, well, they were there, right? Because they're the cream of the crop, which was their GPA that got them into that spot, more or less. And then turns out they roll in and everyone's getting a jet. So, well, guess what? You graduated 8 in your class, so you're still getting a fighter. So congratulations. And again, it's changed, like, the demands.
So, Rain, that's what – I believe that's the root cause of what we're seeing is a little bit of the degradation in quality in the fighter industry these days. It's the fact that everybody is getting a fighter, man. When Vader was going through and Vader was going through UPT and I was going through UPT, like my class had one fighter out of my T-38 drop, man. That was it. The class in front of me, it was all U-20s. Like nobody got a fighter. And there were guys qualified in that class to fight fighters. So it was incredibly competitive and the people that we were sending to fighters were the top of the T-38 class, right? So now we're sending everybody, and there are people in T-38s that do better, and they've already exhibited capacity and skill sets and proficiency that other people haven't, that are going to be transferable in fighter aircraft. And we're sending people that haven't done that as much to fighters no matter what, because 19th Air Force is counting open fighter cockpits. They have conversations about it. They have spreadsheets about it. They're very concerned with the metrics as they pertain to fixing the fighter pilot crisis that was 100% avoidable by just letting people fly fighters when they weren't letting anybody from T-38 fly fighters. And that's the easiest root cause to run. When you send everybody to a thing and you become less selective, you will also buy a degradation, right, in quality. And it's so obvious that you shouldn't have to say it out loud, but apparently it's a surprise to people. And that is... That's mind-boggling, man. Like, that's insane.
Here we are.
Right?
That's yeah.
Insane. But one think thing... it's important for the Randolph thing to go back to it. I do think it's important that when we come up with all these good ideas about how to save money and time, that when you do those things, no matter what they are and how good intention and how well-resourced, you are buying a lack in airmanship. That's the cost of it, right? And that lack in airmanship, it manifests itself in additional risk to aircrew. And then I find that if you are on an SIB and that is not somewhere written down as a root cause or however SIBs work for why that mishap happened, and it's somebody who lacked the resources and training to deal with it prior to that moment in time, then that process is broken as well. And that's disingenuous at best. Right. And I don't like that, I guess.
Yeah, I think one plus having Tiger and Slayer on is that, and maybe we'll give ourselves credit, pat yourself on the back, guys, because I think maybe we were the ones who kind of started the conversation of providing feedback. Because like you said, Drago, like there wasn't a great way to provide feedback about the product. But after the PTT and PTN and UPT 2.5, all of those things like grew and changed and became different because they said like, this is working, this isn't working as well. So the program has changed over, you know, the last 2 years. So I do appreciate that rather than just saying like, hey, this is our product, take it or leave it. They said, hey, let's keep like modifying this program and this course to make it produce the best product we can inside the constraints. Cause that's really what it is. Everybody's operating inside of constraints, UPT, the FTUs, the B courses for all jets, the CAF squadrons, everybody has constraints. They just, you know, doing what they can inside of those.
Yeah. So Rain was talking about UPT 2.5, man. And I had a lot of misconceptions about UPT 2.5. Because I assumed it was tied to PTN and I thought that the two were tied together and they're very different. UPT 2.5 was applying things they learned in PTN, like, and putting that into the T-38 UPT syllabus or the entirety of the UPT syllabus. I just focused on T-38s, I think, because I'm down there and I was selfish, right? And I thought that they were going to be using a lot of this VR stuff that they had access to now to, in lieu of hours, like they had done when they cut the syllabus prior, but that was not in fact the case. It was not in fact the case. They were adding sorties back into UPT 2.5 to almost the amount of hours that was in UPT T-38s when like me, you, and Bender went through. And I thought that was something that I had a misconception about that I felt like I should have owned up to because I was sitting there and I was saying bad things about it with pretty low SA, right? And additionally, they were going to use the VR stuff as a lot of augmentation to training, which is how it must be utilized to not buy that lack in airmanship. Like, let's increase the fidelity of our academic and ground training, but not give up, right, our training in airplanes, because that's the foundational skill set that we lean on when later on we lean on simulators, right? You got to have some sort of baseline build, period, right? And the problem does become, though, when they give you all those resources and they still in ATC are going to exist on a timeline. Now the problem is not that you're not flying enough sorties. It's what are you getting out of those sorties and that training in a syllabus that is very well thought out, right, but also pretty complicated to schedule to make that thing exist in a shrunken time frame. That's where you buy the losses in the fidelity and training, man, right? When you take that, yeah. It's exactly what they did with the B course, man. You take an 8-month thing, you put it down into 6 months or whatever it is, and you compress that thing, and you have omnipresent pressure, either real or you just have to pretend it's real. However it works in ATC, but it's real, right? To get those dudes out of the door on time. How are you able to do all of those same things, all that good training that you would like to do in less time? And the answer is you have to do it worse, right? Because you don't get something for nothing, man. Time and resources. Yeah. Like if you lose one, you're buying a degradation of something else. And those are the rules, man. Like that's it's any NPC yeah. ever, man. You gonna skip a meeting? Sure, dude. But I bet we hit each other in the Marshall. Something's gonna come up.
Yeah. You gotta put pen to paper. You gotta put pen to Definitely. Paper. That's the key. That's what I learned. So unless anybody has any re-attacks for UPT or the T1 stuff, I was going to shift gears to fighter stuff.
Got a lot of hate out of our hearts, so should be good now.
Yeah, that's good. Take that. So
that's my normal tone, Rain. I'm sorry, man. This is how I talk.
Yeah, this is an average day. This is just Tuesday or whatever day it is.
Sorry, man.
The
going like this.
No, this is so 13th Fighter Squadron, Misawa. Drago, Bender, and I were there, and so Drago, explain kind of the 13th. Obviously, people have heard us talk about the 13th, which before we get into that, our boy Vegas, the DO at the Panthers currently, CP to him, just reached CP, out. Vegas, and finally. And he reached out and he said he appreciated it. And he said Misawa's still awesome. And I appreciate that. So Drago, give everybody kind of your perspective of the 13th and your time there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So everybody loves their first, or I don't know if everybody does, but everybody should love their first fighter squadron. And the 13th is my first fighter squadron. It's the best one. They fly the best airplanes, the Block 50 Viper, ain't nothing better. Except, ooh, and this is true, guys, the Block 30 is nice, all right? The Block 30 is pretty dope. Occasionally, like, switches fall off, but you just tape them back on, and it's fine. it's got the best airplanes. It's got unlimited airspace. It had the best dudes on Earth. And, like, Misawa's cool because, like, Misawa is in northern Japan, so it's in, like, 1950s America, you know? So everybody's real close there. You don't get that remote pay. Ask Nike Harris. He's still mad about it, but it's pretty remote, so everybody's really, really close, like you are on a remote assignment. So you got real tight-knit units. You're flying great jets. You're doing cool stuff. Not when I went there, but before, and you and Bender got to do that. But they also get to deploy CENTCOM and do the thing, and did tremendous work in CENTCOM, and then came back and did, I think, the coolest mission set in airplanes, which is suppression of enemy air defense. And they're resourced to get really good training there based on their TDY locations, which are pretty awesome. And then just their airspace, which is for 1,000 miles off the coast of Japan, surface to unlimited. And as long as you don't care about flying in clouds or at nighttime, it's perfect. it was just like, it was true fighter pilot stuff, man. We showed up, you guys taught us how to be fighter pilots. We raged in the bar, we hung out with each other. And then we, on the weekends, like an AC unit, we'd go to the vault and we would study and we made each other better. And we flew the heck out of those airplanes, man. And we got good real quick, you know?
Well, I mean, it's pretty easy to get good quick when you're doing 16 pit 16 turn 12s or whatever.
That's,
I mean,
right, dude.
You couldn't help but fly. I mean, well, heck, I mean, most of us probably got RAP for a month. So RAP is your required flying, and it's roughly 8 to 10 sorties a month on active duty, and you would get that in a week flying at Misawa. It was, you got some airmanship, which we're talking about now, how important airmanship is. Because you think about, so what we're seeing now is what VR, what simulators, what all those things provide is in a sterile environment, you understand how to operate and do things. But what you find is when you get out in the airplane, radios don't work, weather doesn't work out, jets break. And I mean, Misawa always felt like the Wild West to me. And Drago Bender, yeah, like weigh in, like, and it just felt like, it's not that we didn't have oversight, but the oversight wasn't apparent. So on a Monday through Friday, on an average day, like, we'd have dudes have EPs and they'd bring them back and it was like, sweet. And then we just do it all over again the next day. You know, it wasn't crazy, but I think it was because everybody was so current and had so much airmanship that they just handled it well, you know?
Yeah. You're dropping dudes off in the flare with, like, ceilings at 200 feet on a formation approach with him with, like, no MFDs in Misawa, and then, like, going back to make the second bolt. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's something we would do. He's like, all right, dude, you good big fella, and you just go back and then do this huge fight. And that's just – that's how it was, man. I think that's correct. You know, you did everything right, and you're like, all right, man, you know, do whatever paperwork you need to, but I got to go get better. And you would take off, yeah, man. Dude, I'll never forget my second sortie – it might have been third. I just got into Misawa. I was, like, flying for the first 2 weeks. I was flying with Hobo, who's out of Top Gun. I just saw him, dudes. He says hi, by the way. I told him I was nice. Doing this thing. And he's a Top Gun IP right now on the exchange from the 16th. But he was on, like, one of his late plug rides, maybe early iPlugs. And I was in that formation for no reason at all. And I'd flown there 3 times. I got whatever LAO you maybe had given me, so it wasn't great. And I didn't really know how to, like, get around. And it was nighttime. And he just, like, my jet was, like, delayed. And he's like, all right, man, meet us at the tanker. And I tanked, like, twice in my life prior to that. I had never flown in Japanese airspace ever at all. And he just took off with a 3-ship, man. And so I remember this, dude. I just took off into the night in Misawa and just found a tanker on my radar and just flew to it. I talked to zero people. I said no words to Japanese controllers, man. And then I just tanked, and then I just flew because we were on Link 16. I just flew to him in the vol, and I fought this entire vol. And nobody would have said it. Like, nobody would have noticed this, man. I didn't set my altimeter until the tanker said it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's the thing we do, man. You know, and I was just back there doing unacceptable tanker stuff because I wasn't good at it. And then I just went and fought. And then we had so much to talk about because he flew like 2 seed bowls when we got back that, like, he was like, anybody got anything for Evan? And I was like, yeah, man. Like, if you were a departure, like, how would you get to a tanker? You know, like, describe it to me. And he told me, and then we didn't get any calls from the Japanese FAA or whatever, and we just kept pressing, dude. It's fine.
Yeah, and it worked out. And that's why it was like the Wild West. Well, and I was actually just talking about this today with a guy at work that Misawa was – the transition altitude was 14,000 feet, I want to say.
You don't know that. You couldn't pass a written test on the transition altitude.
I'm gonna say that with a resounding question mark. And, yeah, it doesn't matter. But you could be VFR, so visual flight rules. You don't have to be in any sort of like controlled airspace up to 28,000 feet, which is a total plus, especially when you run you and or your wingman out of gas, like 90 plus miles from the field. So you can just kind of like sky hook on the way home at 27.5 VFR and do whatever you want. So yeah, there's some pluses. See, Rain. Yeah. See, Rain, you can't get away with that stuff at you know, in the States at Shaw or anything, right?
You can do anything once, right? That's the name. You can do anything once. I was trying.
Yeah, that's true.
There's not a whole lot of stuff going on up in the northern Japan. That's kind of nice. Eastern seaboard of the United States, slightly different story. And everyone will tell them. Oh.
The thing that pissed me off about the whiskeys in off the East Coast that like Shaw and McIntyre and those squadrons use is they look on a map. You look at them and you're like, dang, that's pretty solid airspace. It looks eerily similar to the Misawa airspace. But what you realize is it's like 80 miles long and then they cap it at 50 or 30 a whole bunch of times, which everybody's like, oh, F-16s, why do they need to go above 30? Turns out Block 50 F-16s want to go above 30 all the time. So it's not all the time, but a lot of times. But yeah, so it was... I was disappointed when I got out to Shaw and they're like, oh, Bulldog airspace, all the whiskeys. And I was like, nah, I'd rather be over the ocean and up in the 40s with my friends.
You get used to wearing poopy all the time there, huh?
Oh, man, yeah. That was talk about speeding. So we'd be out there. We'd be out there and it would be like, I don't know, 50, 40 some degree oceans. So we'd be in poopy suits and we'd wear cat suits under. So poopy suits are anti-exposure suits. So they have, think of like, it's a dry suit for everybody who knows what a dry suit is. And they would make us wear thermals under that. So it was cold outside. It was like 20 degrees and snowing most of the time. So it wasn't that bad, but it was aggressive when the winds would be, I don't know, 10 knots above the limit over the water. And they're like, nah, it's cool. Just stay within gliding distance to land, or the waves would be 15 feet when they can't be over 10. And they're like, just stay within gliding distance to land and you're fine. And you're like, this is so dangerous. And then you say, what if I go out of control? And they're like, I'm not worried about that. Like if you eject, the prevailing winds will blow you back over the island of Japan. You're good. Good to go.
And then we flew in Korea and we did the same thing and nobody else flew that day. Do you remember that? We were out in Kunsan for some exercise. We were like, oh, winds and waves, man. And like everybody else canceled. And we were like, hey, you don't do this thing? They were like, no, you could die.
No, this our OGVs gave us a map. Look at that. It tells us you got to be right. Above 35,000 to be over there. Yeah, just crazy stuff. Oh, man. Go ahead. No, you're good, Drago.
Strongest thing I've ever seen with the poopy suits was Bender was stepping on an iPug ride. Do you remember this? Bender was stepping on an iPug ride, and he had forecasted that we finally could be out of poopy suits. And I think Blitz Norman, like who's real tough on people, was his IP or whatever. We're about to step out, and the top three is telling us that the target it was an OCA bowl, and the target's at the north, always like not named geographically. Are beneath the line, so we all got to wear poopy suits. And Bender at the desk changes. He just gets new coordinates out of his in-flight guide and changes all of the targets so that we don't have to be in poopy suits and just hands them to people. so we don't have to fly. It was the strongest thing that I had ever been a part of. And then we stepped. We just knew targets that I never put because I was new. But it's great.
That's all right. Just hanging on.
Yeah, hanging on, man. I did what he told me.
See, and I respect that Bender does that because it's a combination of not wanting to be told what to do and having the will to do something about it. So I appreciate that. What about Drago? Didn't you come up with the cutoff poopy suit? So it was just the neck and the little.
Yeah, we told him a roll call, man. It was just the neck and then the wrist. You could wear them outside of your flight suit. So it looked like you had a suit on. But if you unzip it, you're just like the Scarecrow from Wizard of Oz, man. We didn't tell Ape we were cutting those, so we had to stop doing that. But it was a good idea for like 2 days.
Yeah, it was definitely a good story. Had a seizure when they saw that.
They were the condemned ones, though. We weren't taking them out of like dudes' lockers, but they still like they had a fit. Yeah, it wasn't. They have like serial numbers. It wasn't
strange.
Oh man, that's great. Yeah, that's the stuff. I mean, it just seemed good. It was fun. It was a good time. So how was it kind of. Once you obviously we get that experience and then you go to like WIC and then you see, you know, cause every squadron has like their things and then you go learn that those things are like very one-offs, you know, it's not like, oh, everybody doesn't do this, like the Winds and Waves thing. But then you go to Holloman and you're like, cause you went like, how was it transitioning to like, I'm an FTU IP just out of WIC versus like, hey, it's the Wild West and we do whatever we want.
I think it was a lot easier because I was in the training command for 3 years prior to being in the Wild West, as you call it. And like Misawa, you know, we did some stuff and we had a great time, man. And they were real cool to us the way that I don't think they could be in 2022 about like, you know, walking the line as fighter pilots. But I already had lived in the training command for a long time. So going back, I didn't necessarily enjoy it, but I understood it. You know what I mean? Like I didn't get there and I was like, whoa, this is crazy. I understand ATC and how it works. So it wasn't a huge transition. And like, you know, I love instructing. And so I like, it's a good job, you know, to teach people like the coolest thing that they may ever get to do is awesome. So I enjoyed being there and I enjoyed the people I got to work with and the people I got to teach, but it wasn't as big of an adjustment, man.
Did you go to WIC?
It's obviously, what's
Did
up?
Did you go to WIC right out of Misawa?
Yeah, actually, I went to WIC so quick that by the time I was done with my 3-year ADSC at Misawa, I was done with WIC and back at Misawa. So I did 2.5 years in the F-16 and I went to WIC.
Yeah, how was that?
I wouldn't recommend it.
Spicy.
I think it was, it was a lot of work, you know, because it is. To get to that level, and WIC is a terrible place to go when you know you're not qualified to be there, you know, and having to be there and have that knowledge and then not wear that knowledge every day when you're doing like, they're like, hey, you're in charge of this 8V20 whatever, you know, and you're like, you're in the EOR watching an air show. And you're like, for one moment, you're like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. You realize that's your entire red air package. And you're like, not as cool, you know, but I'll find some of those dudes over to Target later. That's, you know, like it, you can't really enjoy it the same. But I had a really good time at WIC because it's the best flying you'll ever do. Like I appreciate it every day. It's just like cool fighter jet flying. Cause honestly, like I flew with people that taught me how to be in the F-16, that just taught me how to appreciate like the fighter aviation for what it is. Like sometimes you just got to go rage your face off in F-16s and let it be what it is, you know? And there's guys that are scared to do that at WIC sometimes. And I was never scared to do that. I just want to do the coolest things imaginable all the time. You know what I mean? I just wanted to loft CBU. This dude's letting CBU at 20,000 feet, man, get out of here. You know, get off though. Put him on a timer. Yeah. What do you do?
Do you loft it?
Do you just see the low bar?
Yeah. Yeah.
You could get a one-time waiver. Just let some CBU on the Uter. You can do it on the Uter, man. That's tough. I was gonna figure it out. No, but it was the wig thing was crazy because they needed somebody, I think, due to the F-35. Honestly, the F-35 was taking a lot of applicants from the F-16 community, was starting to at its genesis, and they needed to open up the pool of people that were gonna be accepted to WIG to give us enough weapons officers to have enough people to do that job in units. And so I think they were looking for somebody of my age and qualifications to go to WIC so they could prove that a person could go to WIC. So I was the first FAPE in, like, since we got radars in the F-16 to, like, go to WIC. And it had been like a be no, we shall not do age waivers. But in my class was another dude who was a lot older, and then like a aggressor dude who had never done that before. And so I think they were just looking for a way to, like, open up the talent pool. So part of it was I was doing okay, but part of it was they needed people of, like, that specific, like, age demographic to go. So I was lucky to go, and I think I viewed it through that lens. Like, I was lucky to have a chance to go to WIC, and I was just kind of grateful for all the cool stuff I got to do. And I slept enough to keep going, you know? WIC's hard, man.
Yeah. It's fine. So one of the stories I love, and if you don't want to share it, you don't feel free not to, but one of the stories I really enjoy about weapons school is that obviously weapons school kind of starts off with BFM, so dogfighting, and kind of the number one dogfighter in the upgrading class kind of gets to go BFM other jets in the, like, Frankenjet that the weapons school has. So can you kind of share those stories? Because those are some of my favorites.
Yeah, so the Viper's crazy because you got a lot of different blocks of the Viper, and honestly, we know what they are now, but like 2 years ago, if you would have asked me like what a Block 32 was, like, I don't know, man. Like, let's Google it. But they just put different motors in them, and they don't really tell you which one it is, so you're kind of just like guessing the start sequence and what you have to do. Like, if the motor quits that day, it's just a fun game we play in the Viper, man. So the weapon school had this one jet, was 499, and it was a Block 42, which is lighter because it doesn't have an interrogator for a lot of other reasons. But it had a Pratt & Whitney 229 in it, which is a gigantic motor. And it's not supposed to go in that particular airplane, but they put it in that airplane. So this airplane could go to space. Like, you can feel the difference in F-16s, like thrust-to-weight ratio when you fly them. The Block 30 is, like, amazing. The Block 50 is amazing. The Block 52 is amazing, and they're all, like, a little bit different, but they're all real good. This thing, though, it was impossible to lose if you just remembered to pull your power to idle at some time so you didn't black out. You know what I mean? So I get done with my BFM phase at WIC, and then they just start doing, like, the Top Gun 1v1 thing where, like, if you're done, you get to go fly, like, a little bit of DACT. And so I took this jet out to fly like other airplanes in the Nitter, and they're just like, meet me at this point at this time, and you just merge with whoever it is. But you know, he's probably better than you, but he's not in 499, dude. And so I would just go out there and you would just rape. And it's because it's the best BFM fighter outside of an F-22 on the planet. And I don't know what happened to it. I imagine they crashed it into a mountain after somebody blacked out in it, dude. It was that plane was insane. But I got to a point where I got it to a guy at the floor. And I had to stack away to get range back to try to gun him because I had driven through all my missile whizzes, as is tradition. So you got to get him with the gun now. And I rolled up when I finally felt like I was looking down and I had enough range from him. And I got a radar lock and I didn't have like a gun solution. I couldn't figure it out. And it's because I'd stacked back to like 16, like our start altitude. And so I was like I was vertically outside of the max range of the gun. Was just where that jet had taken me because it could still be climbing right now if it had enough gas. It was incredible. But that's cool. I was like, cool stuff you get to do at WIC, and you're like, man, I don't know if I'm good enough to be here, but like, I'm glad I got to fly that sort of, you know?
Like, yeah.
You know, you still have none packed all your stuff in case you had to go home tomorrow, you know? But you're like, that was a good one for the kids, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's the cool thing. Like, there's so many opportunities. You know, we have a lot of people who are, you know, hoping to be fighter pilots, currently fighter pilots. And I think one of the awesome things is just the stories and the experiences we get to have, because they're very uncommon. You know, it's not a normal thing to do this job and have those experiences and to do something like that and get to tell that story. And, you know, obviously, hopefully everybody kind of understands what he was talking about, but just pretty much what you saw in Top Gun Maverick, that's what Drago was doing to other jets, you know, at the very end.
we'll go with that. I did some losses, man. There was some L's.
Yeah, that's all right. Just Bender, what do you got? We've had tons of connectivity issues. So now sideways. So this is going to be a nightmare of editing, and
he's gone. This is like
what now Bender fell out
with this Flash's episode. None of this. That, I mean, like jab a pin in my eye. So enjoy this one, my friend. There's like 9 Baders.
Yeah, that's what. See, this is a division of labor.
Wi-Fi or no? You think he just like forgot to do it? He's on like 3G out in Hawaii right now. Just can't make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I've got the Marriott points, so I'm on like the super fast internet, so we're good to go over here. I have no idea why Rain's video is
crazy. I'm on the Navy Lodge Wi-Fi, which is just super great.
Yeah, this is
rough. I'm down at right now. Yeah.
I'm down at Pensacola.
He's
yeah.
It's oh, that's awesome.
But good. Let's see. This thing sucks.
That's where it all started. Drago, for me, man. I was a Whiting dude down at Pensacola. I flew down there. T-34 Turbo Mentors.
I've heard that course is chill compared to Air Force pilot training.
Yeah, that's a way to say that, man. That's a cool way to say that. It's different, man. It's different and not like guys in the Air Force act like it's worse, but it's not, man. It's just a different way to like view and do aviation. I just got back from doing the Top Gun 1v1, like Top Gun grad. TDY. With Block 30s, and then we went to Boise and then went back home. And the Navy is just really cool about how they treat aviation, especially at Fallon. Like that was a very special place on how to see like guys still revere fighter aviation, you know?
Yeah.
It was cool to be a part of. I'm glad I went.
That is cool. One. So for everybody who doesn't know Fallon 1v1, so Fallon is where Top Gun currently is. So, you know, North Island is where it used to be. They moved it to Fallon just outside of Reno. And they, every year they put on, or twice a year, they put on a 1v1. So they bring a bunch of different types of jets, C models, F-16s, F-35s, out. And then they all show up and they just get I've never been, so Drago, correct me if I'm saying false things, but they get like a location, so coordinates and a time, and they just meet there at an altitude and then they fight whatever they see. So if they see a Hornet, they legacy Hornet or a Super Hornet, or anything like that. And then it's just a great time to just fight your bros, you know. Drago, what'd I miss?
No, I said, dude, it was the coolest thing ever, man. They put it on right too. Like you get there, they handed me a packet with my call sign on it, like encased in plastic. It had the course rules on it because I had done no preparation whatsoever. So I had no idea how to like taxi or take off or land, you know, and they were just like, here are the 3 things you say and do. And I was like, all right, cool. And Fallon's like 5 miles from its airspace, so it's pretty easy to get in and out. They're very accommodating. It's like a really classy thing they do, and they just hand you this card. And the card doesn't have a takeoff, taxi, anytime. It just says, hey, merge at this point at this time. You know, start at this cap. And you go out there and you just merge with whoever you merge with. And I ended up fighting a legacy Hornet, which that story was told before we merged, man. You know, but he did a good job. I waxed them all over the place out in that airspace, and then we came back and we drank about it, man. It was perfect.
Yeah.
Just the way fantastic it should be. Part about it, dude.
So Drago and I, we
graduation. I missed that part.
That's right.
That's right.
Top Gun. It was a really cool thing.
So I was jealous that it. Oh, we got echoing now. So I was jealous that I didn't get to go. And then I was even more jealous because I talked to my buddy Snapper, who's at McIntyre, and he's like, "Hey, I'm here with your buddy Drago. And then yeah, I find out dude, later. Yeah, he's great. Awesome guy. Get a FaceTime call at 1:30 in the morning from Boom Saunders, and I don't answer it because I'm asleep. And I just get a text after that says, answer my FaceTime call. So I find out the next morning that my friends that I've made at Misawa, McIntyre, Holloman, Fresno, and at Klamath are all in Fallon hanging out together. And I was like, that is either a wonderful time or a terrible time because they all know me. And I don't even want to know if I hope I was not talked about at that point, but that was probably an awesome time. I was sad to miss that.
Dude, it's bucket list, man. You gotta go out and do that thing. It's a class act. You get to fight cool airplanes. If you do everything right, you'll win. Come back, talk about it in the O Club, man. The way it was intended to be. It was great.
Yeah,
those were wholesome.
Yeah, the one thing that Drago and I would do when we were at Holloman, and I highly recommend this to people in all jobs, but specifically fighter pilots, is Scotch nights. So you just roll over to a friend's house. You bring one bottle of scotch. It's been ops tested. Do not bring more than one bottle of scotch, depending on your numbers. But when it's like three of you or four of you, one bottle of scotch probably is enough. And you just sit there until the bottle's gone. And you solve the world's problems. You just you don't have to drink scotch.
You still remember it, man. You got to write them down, though, is the trick. You can never remember them. But they're there somewhere, man.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, how was it, Rain and Bender? Bender, maybe you were there on the latter end of it, but when the whole Shaw gate and all that stuff happened, was there not a lot of like squadron bar activities and stuff like that going on?
I think I can probably tell you in my first 2 years, I think I had a beer in the squadron, and that was at a OG call, and it was a mandatory OG call with all the fighter squadrons, and he brought in a cooler of beer, but you felt like you were going to jail if you took a sip of beer. It was like mandatory fun to show like, oh, it's okay again. Like everything is fine. So, I mean, I think Shaw really suffered for several years for multitude of reasons. But I remember like I showed up, I mean, it was like working at IBM, but with 12 and 14 hour days, you know, no one would want to hang out afterwards and talk in the bar, whether you're having a drink or not. But usually in a fighter squadron, that is where a lot of learning is going to occur. You're going to share a lot of stories and experiences, and that didn't happen at Shaw. Like, you, whatever you had to do, show up, go to the vault, do your thing, and then get out. And any kind of roll call, all the roll calls had to be off base. We would do them when we went to Red Flag in Vegas, but it was a completely different dynamic. I think, Bender, when you did show up, like, it was starting to like turn and kind of like trying to breathe back some of that fighter pilot culture into it. And things in the fighter pilot culture have changed. And we like can all attest to that just in our short time span. But Shaw was really bad for a time period. Hopefully it's gotten better, but it's not a good thing when people aren't willing and don't have the drive that want to hang around outside of what the obligations to your job are, because really where you get that cohesiveness, I think you guys all agree, is it's standing there after the sortie, hanging out in the bar, just chatting, maybe again having a beer, maybe not. But that stuff just didn't happen. It was like working at IBM, which is terrible hours. But it goes back to, I always make this argument, if you talk about like an ops group commander or a wing commander, like at Shaw, for instance, right? Three fighter squadrons, three seed squadrons. So someone correct me on my math, right? But that's probably 40% of the nation's, well, F-16 seed capability, right? But they're tasked to go out there, kill and break things on a daily basis. But there's so many times that things have to go above the wing commander to get a waiver, or have to go above the ops group commander to get a waiver. And you're like, all right, so you're telling me, okay, I get you don't trust me or the other major or the lieutenant colonel, but you don't trust the group commander who's a colonel or the wing commander who's a colonel that has, you know, 25%, 40% of the nation's seed capability at his disposal to make these simple decisions. You have to elevate it up to a 2-star or a 4-star to get it done. That's when I really started having a beef. I guess it's a jobs program to a certain extent. I don't know. Get salty. We need Bender to get in here and give us salt
Yeah, salt Bender just, well, I'll throw some salt out there. Yeah. So I won't name the wing commander, but Drago, you know him well. He was the full-up wing commander that took over as I was leaving Misawa. And he, solid mustache, if that, you know, you guys both probably know who I'm talking about. Yeah. And, but he, so we went to Malaysia, which I wanted to tell that story, but we're getting long in the tooth here, so we can't tell the Malaysia stories. But I know. Well, we might circle back to that. But so we go to Malaysia. We're in Malaysia in like a month. We stop in Yokota for 48 hours. Then we go to Alaska because goodness forbid we just go straight back to Misawa and actually see our family and our children. We have to stay in Yokota for 48 hours after being in Malaysia for a month, then go to Alaska for a month, and then we can't get back. We're stuck in Alaska. So now a 2-month TDY turns into 2 months and 2 weeks, 2 months and 3 weeks. And so we get back, and our squadron commander at the time, who, good dude, he gets a request from the wing to have a CGO, like a CGO luncheon with the wing commander. And he's like, Vader, you're going. And I was like, you don't want to send me to this. Like, this is not a good idea. And he was like, yeah, go ahead. I was like, okay. Like, you know what's going on. Like, I'm about to PCS. Like, I've got really nothing to lose here. So we're at the luncheon and we sit down and, you know, it's like all the CGOC and like a couple of fighter pilots. The CGOC is the company grade officer committee or something like that. It's again, fighter squadrons. We have the benefit of having like 30 of our friends to work with every day, and other career fields have the commander, the subordinate officer, and then mainly enlisted. So I get it why the CGOC exists, but we're all sitting there and I asked the wing commander, I was like, hey, sir, like you had, so our job, like the whole fight tonight thing is to be ready for war in the Pacific on a moment's notice. You had one squadron stuck for weeks in Alaska after having been gone for 2 months, and another squadron stuck in Australia. So we had zero seed coverage in the Pacific. And I was like, what did PACAF, like, how'd they feel about that? And his response was, well, you know, I don't know. I emailed them every day and they never got back to me. And that's when I realized, like, it doesn't actually, like, they don't actually care. You know what I mean? Like, the thing that we talk about and we actually train to, they're like, yeah, it'll buff out. You know what I mean? And that's what kind of made me even more salty when even as a captain talking to the wing commander, like you said, the guy who, if anybody can control that iron, it should be the wing commander. And he was like, yeah, I got nothing. Crappy.
Let's figure, if it happens, you know, we'll figure it out. It's the theme, right? Like, I think, and even Drago said it before, like, you're dealing with an organization of people who get things done. And so that's usually what happens. It's on the backs of people who just want to win and want to be the best, you know, good or bad.
That's tough. It's tough to do that, because then you push people out. Like, you ask them to outperform and make it happen. And at some point people are like, I'm tired of that, because they can do a lot of other stuff that doesn't ask them to do that.
I haven't heard anyone getting out. So strange.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Flying big fat fatties. Right. Oh man. Well, I think we, Bender, what do you got?
It's live.
When did you get to the Panthers? Were you there in October 2015?
Yep.
Did you go to that deployment, or when we went to Osan? Remember that one, Vader? We left like at 2 a.m. for Osan. Oh. When
so I
should name dropping it. You got to edit that out. We never name drop when it's going to be making fun of someone.
I probably won't edit it out.
As he took sweep in Nike.
Yeah, it was when they were supposed to launch, like...
Yep.
Yeah, you might have been in our cell. Anyway, that was like the most terrifying night of my life was... I think you two were there in that. But the first, we like got put into crew rest, and they had this all like gonked out scheduled that like again, I can't remember. I think you two might have been in that one, but we were supposed to like go to bed and be ready to launch at like 7 in the morning because there's a whole like group of 10 that we're going to launch like that evening. But they got delayed in their jets until like 11 at night or something. And so they were all like, nah, it's an ORM. It's an exceedance of our ORM or whatever. So they called like 2 hours into everybody's sleep cycle. They called the rest of us to launch. So I like went to bed at 9 and got called at 11:30. And they're like, you're leaving. Come in as fast as you can. Were you, I can't, I just have this memory of Drago being in that formation, but I could be remembering that wrong.
I think it was,
but we like, maybe it was sweep. Probably was sweep. But they launched us and they're like, there are tankers over the Sea of Japan. They'll be like 27,000 feet. They'll be up this frequency. Just like find your way there. And Japan goes to sleep at like midnight. So there's no like Japanese air controllers or anything. So we just like launch into blindness, like start heading, you know, whatever west towards like the Koreas. And I don't know how we found, we've eventually like on the radar found this tanker on guard, like get connected to him. And then there ends up being two tankers. So we have this, we're in the middle of the weather and all of a sudden the shadow just like flies over the top of everybody. And we had zero idea that there was a tanker, a second tanker in this airspace. And we had like a 500-foot pass, like as we're trying to get on the boom of this thing at 2:30 in the freaking morning, trying to go to Korea for this exercise. And I'm like, that's, and it was like the good idea. That was the same. I won't, well, we can call nicknames, right? But that was a good time. Timmy GM was like, oh, yeah, we can totally. It was 2 hours notice. We will send our entire squadron over to Korea, like, no worries or whatever. So they all, like, patted themselves on the back. Meanwhile, we almost lost, like, 6 jets in this super terrible idea. Anyway, that was one of the other lose faith, like, in the leadership ability of, you know, certain ranks and above.
Yeah, that was a harrowing evening. I remember, I think I was the cell after you guys. And we, I flew with Burn over there and that was an experience.
Oh,
and Burn. I remember. Yes. Yeah. launch the alert tug.
Yeah, right? The alert tug, dude.
Drago, you got to tell that one. So, okay. So we're at Misawa. When you are flying pits, so hot pits are, maybe they are exactly what they sound like. You don't shut the jet off. Maintenance just plugs in and then refuels the jet while it's running, because if you fly airplanes, you know, when you shut them down, they just break. So you don't shut them down. You just fuel them back up and send the pilots back airborne, which makes for like 5.5-6 hours in the airplane each day. But the problem you run into is you all launch at the same time. And you all do like BFM or ACM where you burn a lot of gas fast and you all land at the same time. So instead of just like a gas station where you like zip in, get gas in like 5 minutes and leave, it takes like 15, 20 minutes per jet with two hot pits running and you have 16 jets. So there's a point where if you're the last one to land, you've got like 40 minutes, like an hour wait to get gas. And you have a minimum of 600 pounds on the ground that you can have in your aircraft. So everybody starts padding their gas. So now we're taking off with, I don't know, call it 8,000 pounds of gas. But we have to land with 3,000 pounds of gas just to wait an hour possibly to refuel to go back out.
Some of us had to land with 3,000 pounds of gas.
That's true. So now I'm going to hand this over to you, Drago. So just be prepared. So now a bunch of us are all flying. And a bunch of us landed and we all come back and we're like, man, you know, where'd that other formation go? They should be on the ground any minute now because they've been airborne for a while as compared to the rest of us. So Drago, I mean, you were there. So what happens next?
Nothing to EOR, man. And it's like you pad your gas and you know this is going to happen. So you're like, you're eating like a peanut butter sandwich, man. You've like filled up some piddle packs. You're pretty chill, you know? I was like in a constant upgrade, so I was thinking about all the stuff I should have done better, right? And I was just like running through it over and over, and I was like, well, hope that doesn't happen again, you know? And and we've been sitting there for probably like 25 minutes, and we're all monitoring the ops frequency, which is where we're coordinating the taxi flow to get to and from the hot pit, which are in these hardened shelters, right? And the F-16 comes barreling down the runway. And it's not like slowing down, dude. It's at the three board going, I don't know. It's going 120 knots maybe at the three board, dude. Like just trying to get there as quickly as possible. And I'm thinking maybe there's like an emergency I don't know about. And he peels off the runway. He peels off the runway like cartoonishly. Like I've never seen an F-16 turn that sharp on the ground. And just gets D-arm. Like we're all just waiting in D-arm. Like doesn't even pull into the D-arm to get his gear pinned. And then immediately on us, this is like ops, we be 2-1 or whatever it was that day. He's like, oh, who's on the pits right now? And he can see there's like 8 jets waiting for the pits, right? And ops is like, well, like this is the order of people, and like it takes like 30 seconds to list the 8 dudes there to go through the pits because those are the rules. And we be 3-1 that day is like, he's like, I can't support that. I got like 750 pounds of gas. And he's like breathing real heavy. You know, he's just sweating through his poopy suit. You can just see him. Just like he's like just parked parallel to the fucking to the EOR and the taxiway, man. And it's just a lot of stress going on in this airplane that has just landed that seems like it doesn't need to be happening. And Ops is like, well, man, you're like number 9 for the pits. And then he goes, he makes this actual radio call. He goes, launch the alert, Doug. Because he was going to shut down. Because he couldn't make it to the pits. He was going to shut down in the middle of the taxiway. And the maintenance was going to have to come out and tug him back to the original parking spot. And it is, to this day, like top 5 most shameful radio calls I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
One of the funniest ones, though, man.
And then poor Sweep was just along for the ride. He was just the wingman.
I forgot getting, Sweep made it if he shut down.
Yeah, getting drug on
it. Decapitate your lines and just call it a loss, man. Like, hey, just buy me a bottle, dude. I'm sorry about the fuel lines.
Yeah.
Didn't work out.
That's for an impromptu low level on the way home across Japan.
That's right, dude. They left from our airspace. It was 100 miles away. And instead of coming back at, you know, VFR 27.5 like everybody else to save gas, they ripped a low level through the Japanese countryside and shut down the taxiway.
When the mood strikes.
When the mood strikes.
Awesome.
Oh, man. That's what I mean. Just wild stuff.
That was wild. Yeah. That was funny. That was the funniest radio call I may have ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, man. Bender, what else? What am I missing?
Well, I don't know. I think we got to let Rain go to bed. He's like on vacation from his twins, so
oh,
it's
yeah,
time
get
for him to
sleep.
Get some rest.
Not that he's getting vacation, yeah, just in case his wife's missing. But
that's like you.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point. Whatever. No. None of our wives listen to this. I know that's that for true. A fact. Well, I know my wife doesn't listen to this.
1,000%. Yeah, no. They have to hear us talk all the time. Why would they want to listen to us on here?
Wanted to listen to your voice.
Awesome.
Said no wife.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, Drago, we really appreciate you joining us on the show because you're an awesome dude. We appreciate you. We appreciate the hard work you put in. And hopefully you can make it to Valley Thunder to party and rake with some Eagles out there.
Dude, I'm down. I'll see you in Fresno in February, dude.
Done. Bring Look at that. Maybe we'll do in person Kodiak Shack Bro Chat with Rain and Bender because they travel easy. You know, they're at the airlines.
we got the Wi-Fi situation doped out for Bender, but I'm in, man.
Yeah, my house Wi-Fi is full up, so we'll be good.
Love that. All right. Well, I appreciate All you right. guys, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, awesome. All right. See ya. Bye, everybody.
All right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.